This is Mark Strassman, reporter with Etopia Media's Broadband Over Powerline World. We're about to speak to Brett Kilborn, who's Director of Regulatory Affairs at the United Powerline Council in Washington, D.C. Welcome back to Broadband Over Powerline World.
Thanks, Mark.
Your organization, the UPLC, has just filed some more papers with the FCC. What, in essence, are you asking for in those new filings?
Basically, we're trying to preserve the status quo as far as the opposition to the petitions that were filed. Some of the petitioners are trying to impose some further restrictions, want to try and carve out some additional protections for their own licensees, their respective licensees they represent.
What specifically were the restrictions that they wanted to add?
They've asked that BPL operations be excluded from certain aeronautical frequencies, and also they've asked for, you know, similar restrictions that apply to bands that are used by amateurs. There are also recommendations from some folks that want to get protection from advance notice, essentially.
Okay, so these restrictions would mean that BPL would no longer be allowed to operate on certain frequencies.
Right.
Okay. Now, in terms of the procedure, the press release that you've sent out said that you filed both oppositions and replies to oppositions to petitions for reconsideration at the FCC. What's the difference between a reply to an opposition to petitions for reconsideration and oppositions, if you could try to clear away that morass of terminology?
The way the process works, first petitions get filed.
Right.
And then there are subsequently oppositions that are filed to those petitions.
Right.
And then the last phase of the process, there are replies to the oppositions that are filed against your original petitions. So it's sort of a back and forth exchange.
But overall, in substance, what you're asking for is that the requests made of the FCC, that they change the rules to both carve out more frequencies that can't be used by BPL and to require posting of information on a BPL database prior to the installation of the BPL deployments not be accepted by the FCC, and that the situation be left the way it is.
Right. Yeah, the folks that are concerned about BPL, you know, want to try and impose some further restrictions to ensure that any BPL operations would never cause any interference to their licensed operations. And the way the FCC has gone about it is the FCC has set the emission limits at such a level that it'll reduce the probability to the level where there's, you know, not as many instances of interference. And okay. Then over and above that, then they can cure any interference by mitigating it.
Okay. How much merit do you think that these requests from these other petitioners have?
You know, at this point, we haven't seen any evidence to suggest that there's going to be widespread interference. What we have said is that the possibility of interference exists. The important thing to emphasize is that to the extent that any interference does occur, it can be mitigated quickly and effectively because the systems themselves are advanced. They can be dynamically changed from a remote location so that either the frequency power will be reduced or the frequencies will be shifted themselves. So, you know, I think we've got most of the issues covered, but that hasn't convinced the opponents.
Okay, now if the FCC agreed to the opponents of BPL's request, how much of a crimp would that put in your style? Could the UPLC live with those restrictions, or would it significantly impact your ability to offer the BPL service?
Well, what we'd like to say in that case is that, you know, it's always up to the BPL operator if they want to voluntarily notch out an entire band. And in fact, some of the BPL operators already do that on a voluntary basis, say with the amateurs. So we'd like to keep it that way. You know, to the extent that it was made an obligation to do so, the problem is that, you know, if everybody, you know, insisted on the same treatment, all of a sudden there would be no bandwidth left in the entire band that we operated in. So We'd like to keep it voluntary to the extent that we can.
Okay. Now, one of the provisions that you're talking about in the replies to oppositions, it says in the press release that UPLC reiterated its need or its desire to eliminate the requirement that BPL operators post information to the BPL database 30 days in advance of operation.
Right.
Now, what is that BPL database, and what's your position on extending? On requiring a posting of that information prior 30 days prior
sure.
to the time the system goes into operation.
Yeah, just to clarify, what we're doing in that document where we're replying to oppositions is we're supporting our own petition.
Okay.
So in our original petition, what we had asked for were two things. One, we're very concerned that the FCC has a requirement that forces the BPL operators essentially to post information about their operations to this BPL database 30 days in advance of operations, concern being that competitors will be able to just go directly to that database and determine where we're getting ready to deploy, and then they'll just go ahead and drop prices and lock in customers. There really isn't a reason necessarily to have an advance posting requirement. What we would like to see is that the Commission would allow us to post the information at the time we actually commence operations.
Okay.
That's one of the things. The other thing is the Commission has changed the equipment certification or equipment authorization requirements. Currently, the BPL equipment needs to be verified. There's a lot of equipment that already has been verified under the FCC rules. In an 18-month transition period, the Commission will require that the equipment be certified, and it also has to meet, certain additional requirements. What we're asking for is that the FCC extend the transition period as it applies to equipment that's either installed or marketed. So that'll give us a little bit more time to get the equipment, through the pipe, essentially, in terms of the delivery of equipment that's already being shipped and actually be deployed.
The
bottom line is that, the equipment will still have to comply with the FCC rules.
Let me see if I understand that. This is not, this doesn't relate to an extension on an ongoing basis for the timing of when equipment needs to be certified, but in fact it refers to the time when certification will be required of any and all equipment. Is that what you mean?
Let me step back a bit.
Right.
When the FCC changed the rules, it said any equipment that's manufactured, imported, marketed, or installed must all be certified as of this date, 18 months from the date of the effectiveness of the rules.
When was that date? When is 18 months from?
It'll
that
be
time?
June 6, I think.
Of this year,
2006.
June 6, 2006 mm-hmm. is 18 months from the time
right,
that it was promulgated, and that's when it's effective.
Right.
How much of an extension are you asking for beyond that?
We've asked for additional, I think, 12 months. I'm sorry.
Right.
To go back to my original petition, if you can spare me that.
Right.
But all we're asking for is the bottom line is we're asking for some additional time so that the equipment that's marketed or installed can continue to be marketed and installed without necessarily being certified after that initial deadline.
Does equipment that's been installed now or is going to be installed before June 6, 2006, will it need to be certified on that date, or is it somehow exempt from those requirements, or is it exempt until that date and then it falls under them?
If it's being manufactured or imported, it would have to be certified as of that date. If it's being marketed or installed, it could still be offered under those reasons, even without being certified until an extended period.
Can this equipment be certified now? Do the standards exist?
Some can, but what we're trying to do is provide a little bit of flexibility within the rules that avoids stranded investments, so that you'd have a lot of equipment that's already been purchased and warehoused that may not have been installed necessarily, but which would, if these rules were arbitrarily imposed, where the FCC has written them, make them essentially useless. You know, that's what we're trying to avoid here.
Okay, so that pretty much covers the filings that you've put with the FCC. If we could just spend a few minutes here going over the general picture and maybe some specifics about what is happening overall with this dispute that's ongoing between the UPLC and the ARRL, which has been filing these complaints and says that BPL is causing interference, and UPLC says it's not, or if it is, it can be mitigated, and it's not a problem. Where do things stand overall with that right now?
We're continuing to have discussions to the extent that we can. I know of a couple of different deployments where they're still, working with amateurs on a local level. Nobody's backing down in their pleadings, let's put it that way.
I'm sorry?
I said neither side is backing down in its pleadings.
Okay. Is all of this to and fro impeding the deployment of BPL?
No, I wouldn't say that. I think that, it's just utility companies are recognizing that this is part of, what they're going to have to go through as they go forward with the deployments. In some cases, it's been, a very quiet sort of situation. When they've deployed, they haven't necessarily faced any opposition, but in some cases, they've had to deal with a lot of opposition. It's just something that they need to recognize going in.
Do you know specifically what the status of the situation is in Irving, Texas, involving TXU Energy and their deployment of BPL?
Just what I've read.
Are they going ahead, or have they stopped that?
I believe that they have stopped. I'm not sure if that is, a hard stop or whether they're just sort of considering their options.
And were complaints there about the RFI, the radio frequency interference, important in their decision to stop?
See, that's another thing. I don't know, and the natural inclination is to claim that it was, but it's not at all clear that that was actually the case.
Okay. And then the other specific case that's been pretty prominent is in New York City in Westchester, or in Westchester County in Briarcliff Manor,
right,
just north of New York City, with the test involving Ambien Consolidated Edison, where there have been a lot of complaints from ARRL. I've had some conversations with the Con Ed spokesperson, who says that according to the FCC things are okay, but that's disputed by the ARRL. Do you have any knowledge about what the situation is in Briarcliff Manor?
Well, yeah, I think the Con Ed is right on this one. Unlike Irvine, in Briarcliff, the commission actually went out and did measurements, and they weren't able to verify what the FCC, what the ARRL was claiming.
Although I think that after they did the measurements, and the ARRL made more measurements and complained more, saying they hadn't gotten the right kind of testing from the FCC.
Right. Yeah. And so there's a natural debate that's going on between the FCC now, between the ARRL towards the FCC. I don't think the FCC has necessarily replied to the ARRL. They're not accepting the FCC's findings.
Okay. Would you say that the discussion about this is being conducted primarily at the local level between local ARRL chapters and the local energy company, power company, or is UPLC involved at some national level with the AARL national leadership to try to resolve this, or do you expect things will just sort of continue to sputter around in various local disputes?
No, there's an effort, an informal effort, if you will, to work between the ARRL and the UPLC,
right,
to resolve these issues. At the same time, we're also, the two organizations are involved in, standards efforts through the IEEE, for example,
right,
which are trying to hash out some of these issues as well.
So you're saying similar disputes about what the standards ought to be are going on at the IEEE?
Yeah, I'm actually the chair of the BPL study group, which is looking at various standards under the umbrella of the IEEE,
right,
for BPL. And one of those subgroups is tackling the EMC issue, which is,
electromagnetic radiation.
So, yeah, the folks from ARRL are involved in that subgroup, as are folks from the industry side.
Okay. So Time is sort of the essence here. There was a big announcement about WiMAX yesterday from Intel. There's going to be another one from Fujitsu on Thursday. Verizon has announced essentially broadband to the home in a lot of new locations. Philadelphia has announced a plan to build a Wi-Fi cloud over the whole city.
Mm-hmm.
Given that there's so much progress on other fronts in terms of broadband delivery, do you think that these delays or confusions or complaints and cross-filings are going to put BPL at a competitive disadvantage?
Well, I don't think it's slowing it down per se. We'd like to see, you know, the pace of BPL increase, but it's not, you know, I don't get the sense that the interference issue is the thing that is delaying the pace of the deployment.
What would you say is?
I think it more has to do with just working out some of the business case issues.
Does that mean that power companies may decide that what they want to do is use BPL to monitor their own lines but not use it to provide internet access to customers?
Not necessarily one or the other. It's just a question of, you know, what balance there is between the two, how widely it gets deployed, that kind of thing.
Do you know if on the technical level, if using an electric grid only to for internet connectivity to only to monitor the grid presents any different profile in terms of RFI issues from using it to provide internet access to customers?
No, I can't imagine that there would be any difference.
It's pretty much the same thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it wouldn't be a choice that would be driven by interference.
Okay. So why don't you wrap up then and say again to our listeners what you're asking the FCC for and what your expectations are in that regard.
Okay. What we're asking for essentially is that the FCC give us a level playing field with our competitors when it comes to, you know, complying with this BPL database notification requirement. You know, we support the FCC 100% in terms of, you know, making the BPL database work. We just don't see any need to, you know, post that information in advance and tip off our competitors. As far as the equipment certification requirement goes, we're really just trying to provide a little bit more time to allow companies to use equipment that's already, you know, being delivered and will be installed, so that that equipment, you know, can continue to be installed rather than to be arbitrarily thrown in the garbage can, essentially, if the certification requirements are imposed too quickly. And at the same time, in both cases, when we're talking about the BPL database or we're talking about the equipment certification requirement, fundamental requirement is that BPL is an unlicensed operation. We need to mitigate interference to the extent that it does occur, and we're fully committed to that. So that we're not trying to, get out from under any kind of obligations as far as that's concerned. We're just trying to, you know, correct some imbalance in terms of the way the rules are written. Overall, we're very pleased with the FCC's decision. We're just trying to, you know, provide some minor edits. That's the way we feel about it. As far as some of the, you know, our opposition that we filed, the folks that are, you know, dissatisfied with BPL or dissatisfied with the FCC continue to argue that there should be additional restrictions. We think the FCC has, you know, assessed the interference probability of BPL. They found that it's low. They struck the right balance, and we don't believe that the FCC should impose any further restrictions because it will definitely have an impact on the performance of BPL. Any kind of additional interference protection that might be gained by virtue of those restrictions would be offset by the additional burden on BPL.
One last question. Michael Powell, the former director, commissioner of the FCC, has left. He's been replaced. He was a big supporter of BPL, apparently. Do you know much about the views of the new head of the FCC in terms of BPL? Have you seen any statements by him so far?
He was in support of the original report and order. All the commissioners were. I suspect that he would continue to be in support of BPL. I don't think that will change. Everyone at the FCC is fully committed to seeing competition in the broadband market. They recognize that BPL represents the possibility of a third wire to the home. I just don't see any change in terms of the FCC's position towards BPL just by virtue of, you know, Chairman Martin.
How important overall to the health of the economic health of the power industry in the U.S. is BPL? Is it something? Is it a make or break thing? Is it a frosting on the cake? Is it a really an essential aspect of their business plans over the next few years?
For utilities?
Right.
Oh, it could be, you know, earth-shaking.
Right.
To the extent that it would change fundamentally the way the utility companies do their business. You know, that it gets undersold in terms of, you know, what people want to talk about when it comes to BPL.
Here's a chance to talk about it.
Well, let me just give you an example. Right now, the utility companies automatically change out equipment on a scheduled, you know, time frame. They just assume that, you know, certain transformers, for example, will last 25 years or something like that.
Right.
That may or may not be the case. And if it's not the case, you know, either you're throwing away money that you could defer, or two, you've got a potential hazard on your lines. By virtue of having BPL out there, you'll be able to see whether that equipment is failing early or failing late.
Right.
In either case, you know, you're either saving lives or you're saving money. And that's just one of, you know, we're just scratching the surface of all the things we can do with BPL
and
internal applications.
Right. So you're saying that the internal monitoring function that BPL can perform for utilities is very important.
Right. Yes.
Apart from whether it's offered as a service to customers.
Right. And what it can do for customers, you know, on the commercial side is also important too. It's just that in terms of, you know, something that you're asking about, you know, what's the big deal about BPL? I mean, the internal applications may be as much or more of a big deal with BPL than the commercial applications.
Okay, and as you said before, though, the ability to go forward with that is also dependent on some sort of resolution of the RFI, radio frequency interference issue.
I'm not sure that they are related. I mean, like I said, I mean, BPL operates and it provides internal applications and it provides commercial applications.
Right.
The RF that, you know, is a byproduct of those operations is not affected by whether we're running it for internal applications or commercial applications.
Right, meaning if the issues can't be resolved between the ARL, FCC, and your group, then the opportunity to use BPL for internal monitoring that you just said was very important won't be available either.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of, there's a logical leap involved in what you're saying.
Right.
The commission, you know, is the final arbiter of whether there is or is not interference.
Right. But if there is interference, as you said a few times, it would equally be present for internal monitoring and external customers' access.
There is the possibility of interference either way.
Okay. All right.
Well, I'm sorry. Don't feel like I'm answering your question.
No, I think you did. All right, well then, thanks very much, and we'll check back in again in a few months after, presumably there are going to be more cross filings, and we'll see where things stand, and possibly someday there'll be some kind of resolution to this.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, this is the last set of filings.
Meaning that the FCC is going to have to say something pretty soon?
Yeah, the way the process works now is the commission will review the petitions,
right.
It'll issue a memorandum, opinion, and order.
Right.
At that point, as far as the FCC is concerned, it's out of their hands.
So that'll be a finding and order pretty much on a report and order on the order of what they did last October that set this whole cycle in.
What the MONO will do
right.
is it'll only address those issues
right.
that were raised on petition.
Okay.
Certainly the ARRL has filed a petition that covers a lot of issues. If the FCC were to, you know, to grant all their requests,
right.
that would be a dramatic change. But
right.
a lot of the petitions have asked for, you know, somewhat, you know, more limited relief. So, you know, to the extent that any of those petitions were granted, it wouldn't have nearly as much effect.
So things could either be dramatic or not dramatic, depending on what the FCC decides.
Yeah, I mean, most likely, I don't expect that you're going to see a dramatic change when it comes to the MONO.
And at that point, the only alternative open to people who are still dissatisfied would be to go to court, right?
Right.
Okay. So.
And they have to go to federal court.
They have to go to federal court. Oh, and if they go to federal court, would that pretty much stand as determinative for all the separate places where these disputes are going on now?
What the court could do is it could either, you know, fully support the FCC,
right,
or it could fully support, you know, whoever files the petition,
right,
or it could throw it back to the FCC and have them start the whole process over again.
Okay, so
yeah, who knows what will happen?
Okay, well, at least people will be well informed about the uncertainty if they listen to what we've just said. So,
okay.
Thanks very much for talking to us on Broadband Over Powerline World.
Thank you, Mark.
Talk to you later.
See you.
Bye.